It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kick start it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome, friends, near and far, one and all, to Two Nerds in a Pod. It's Tuesday, October 26th, 2021, which means it's time to get nerdy. Episode 204 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I'm Maxion, and I'm joined by my fellow nerd and friend, Mr. Nice Guy 425, also known as Mr. Lom Galuka. Shout out to our returning sponsor, Game Insider Magazine, and Mr. Nice Guy, how you doing, sir?
Dude, I'm doing really good, man. I feel like I'm kind of, like, I always start off by talking about gigs and stuff that I've done, and I had a decent one this weekend, but I always just say, hey, it went well, like, nothing crazy ever happens at my shows, so we're not even going to get into it this week, but life overall is good. We're coming up on that beautiful holiday of Halloween where kids get a lot of candy. And I took my kids out tonight to go do a little trick-or-treating at our church. And we have three more trick-or-treating set up, Mac. We have the one in our neighborhood. We have one in a neighboring neighborhood. And then we have one with some other friends. And I feel like that's totally unnecessary. I got to go once as a kid. These kids are getting spoiled and dentists are loving it, man.
That sounds terrific. I mean, so this will be four total trick-or-treating opportunities, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
To me, that's three too many, but it is what it is, right? I'm a good father. Father of the year. That's right. Father of the year, and my wife is mother of the year. But Mac, how are things on your end, man? What's going on? Any trick-or-treating in your future?
No, not really. Mrs. the Mac and I, we do not have any kids, and trick-or-treating's a child's thing. And we live...
It's not, and that's why I asked. You can go at any age. You can go at any age, and that's why I asked. I fully expect to see pictures of the Mega Man uniform this year.
It's probably not going to happen. I might, emphasis on might, engage in some costumery in preparation for Halloween, just because there's a friend who wanted to do this whole costume contest thing, and we had, you know, assignments for, you know, what to be. It was a whole thing, and I don't know. I point being is that there is unlikely to be free candy in my future. The candy I'm going to get is the candy of adults. It's the candy that I just go to at the supermarket and I purchase for myself and hope nobody's judging me. Because, of course, we're in the middle of nowhere, Mr. Nice Guy. You know, I mean, nobody's coming out here to knock on this door. And if they did, I don't even know what I would give them.
But if you go get that candy and then you get that one trick-or-treater, you have the opportunity to make their Halloween the best Halloween of all time. Because you're like, yo, we were about to shut it down, trick-or-treater. But you have just walked into a house that has a whole bucket of candy and was going to eat it. But now it's yours. And it's going to be their best Halloween ever.
Well, okay. I will stand prepared for just such an eventuality. Although, I will say, what is nice about Halloween or any of these, like, branded holidays, Halloween, Valentine's Day especially, is when, you know, like, the day after, the week after, when they do the big discounts on the candy, because they're like, well, it's,
of course,
you know, gotta get rid of it because we're not gonna be zoned. So I love that stuff. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I'm hyped for that too, man. And on that note, I say we do what we do best and hop right into the gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. Was it a big week?
It was a decent-sized week, and I feel like we have a lot of topics this week that are, like, not like, hey, Mac, I know you don't play consoles, but what do you think about this? Like, I feel like we have, like, conversation that you're going to be excited about. So, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, episode 204 of Two Nerds in a Pod is a go. Welcome, and thank you for tuning in. Let's start with Valve. Man, I know you love Valve. I love Valve. We all love Valve. We all love Steam. We all love PC. This is from GameSpot, or excuse me, from IGN.com. written by Logan Plant. If you're looking to find some great deals on PC games, Valve has announced its Steam sales events for the rest of the year. While sales dates are normally kept secret until the event, leaks have tipped off would-be PC gamers for years now, and it looks like Valve has decided it's not worth the trouble to keep the sales confidential anymore. The next sale, the Steam Halloween sale, starts Thursday and runs through Monday, and you can see the full list of upcoming sales below. Mac, I'm going to go through these sales with you. The question that I have for you is, like, is this good that Valve is getting ahead of this? Is it good for gamers? Is it good for them? What do you think? Steam Halloween sale, October 28th through November 1st. Steam Autumn sale, November 24th through 30th. And then the Steam Winter sale will be December 22nd, 2021 through January 5th, 2022. Valve has never announced these in advance before, man.
Well, I, for one, am excited. I would certainly like to know that I need, you know, the date that I need to set just a little bit of extra money aside for some impulse purchases. You know what I mean? That seems great. I mean, I don't see a downside. Is there a downside, dude?
I don't think there's a downside. I honestly think, like, it's a very consumer-friendly move. And Ish Mobile in the chat says it's an interesting choice to announce them in advance. Like, here's the thing. Have you ever bought a game and then seen it go on sale? Like, a week or two after you bought it? I have.
Not a week or two, but maybe a couple of months later.
Okay. And so, yeah, like, a couple of months, to me, it's not, like, that's not as frustrating. But, like, a couple weeks later, to me, that's frustrating. Because we're all cheap as gamers, right? Even if it's just $5, I'm like, dude, I could have waited and got $5 off this game. So, you know, it probably helps prevent them refunding people. Because, you know, with Steam, if I believe if you've played a game for less than like 2 hours, you can just refund it. Correct me if I'm wrong, chat or Mac, but I'm pretty sure that is their policy.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it's that 2 hour limit.
Yeah, or if you haven't downloaded it. I'm not sure all the rules, but bottom line, now you can say, hey, we know when these sales are going to be. One, we can set aside money, like you said, if someone wants to set aside money to buy stuff. But two, they can say, there's a game I've been waiting for. I'm going to wait and see if it hops on this sale, and then I'll buy it. And if it doesn't, then I know there's 2 months until the next sale. I'll buy it anyway. I'm not worried about losing that money. So, now that said, Mac, here's a question that I want to know. Steam wishlist, what do you got on there that you're hoping will go on sale, if anything? I know your Steam wish list is probably pretty deep.
Actually, no. I think I've only got maybe 7 to 10 items on my Steam wish list. And if I'm being 100% honest, I think I can only name one or two items from that wish list off the top of my head. Maybe just the one. And that would be the Mega Man... The Mega Man Zero collection. The one that Capcom did a little bit ago with the Mega Man Zero games from Game Boy Advance and put those all up on Steam. I would enjoy playing through that on my computer.
I'm surprised that there is any Mega Man game that you don't already own. I'm not going to lie.
I have them for my handheld, and I've played them. But, you know, it's one of those where it was... Interesting side note. I believe it was until the Mega Man Legacy Collection 2 that included Mega Man's 9 and 10... I'm pretty sure you couldn't play them anywhere except for on the Wii, which is actually why I got my Nintendo Wii in the first place, because I'm like, there's Mega Man 9 and 10, and I haven't played them, and I need to play them because they're classic Mega Man games. And so I bought that just for that. But that's neither here nor there. But just to speak to the truth of what you're saying about, you know, is there a mountain high enough or a valley low enough to keep Mac separated from Mega Man games? And the answer is probably not.
Okay, so here, this is the crazy thing. We're going to go so deep down the rabbit hole with this. So, like, you've already played them, but you want them just so you can play them on your PC. But you also have the Steam Deck reserved, as do I. And so you're going to get them for PC, and I guarantee if and when you get the Steam Deck, you're just going to end up playing them on handheld again on the Steam Deck. I that's what I think is going to happen, because to me, that's the easiest way.
You say this as if it's a bad thing?
No, I'm just saying we all have our series, our IPs, where we're just willing to double dip, and it, like, it doesn't make any sense on paper, but, like, somehow as a gamer, I totally understand where you're coming. Anyway, we have talked about that enough. Let's keep things moving. Welcome to Spenis, Ishmobile, and Metzgirl. Typing it up in the chat. Mac, let's talk about Ubisoft, man. You know I love Ubisoft. That's mm-hmm. that's my people. Mm-hmm. Ubisoft, my people. This is on Kotaku.com by Luke Plunkett. One of the bleakest things about modern-day video gaming is the way major publishers are obsessed with not just gaining your attention, but keeping it, holding it trapped and exposed to their monetary ecosystems for as long as humanly possible, while they do everything they can to bleed you dry. So, Mac, I'm just going to skip ahead, and bottom line, what has happened here is Ubisoft has sent emails out to people who are playing Far Cry 6, basically encouraging them to play it more, and almost kind of like belittling them, saying that they haven't done well enough. And here's what one of the sample emails says. It basically has a picture of Giancarlo Esposito, great actor, who is the villain in Far Cry 6. And it says, "Hola, Rojas." I probably pronounced that wrong. "I wanted to thank you for giving me free reign in Yara. Take it easy and know that Yara is in capable hands." Basically, the villain saying to the player, like, "Hey, you didn't finish the game yet. Thanks." And then it says, "Surely you can do better than this. 33 hours played, the number of kills, the number of unique weapons collected, the number of stealth kills." Mac, bottom line, what Ubisoft is doing here is they're emailing people who maybe have not finished the game with a creative, you know, some would say it's creative marketing, some would say it's desperation, but basically encouraging the players to get back into the game. So my question for you is this creative marketing or is this desperation?
Oh, I think there's a third option.
Okay.
Creepy.
Creepy. Okay. Okay. How's it creepy?
Of course, we know that the game companies happen to have information on, you know, what we're playing. This is just a observation here that clearly Ubisoft knows how many kills, and how many hours, okay, totally get, but how many kills, how many stealth kills, how many that's a little bit, I feel like that's a little creepy level of micromanagement on the data level. And while it doesn't tell them all that much interesting about me, it does say certain things about my playing habits. And I mean, obviously, if you've read an end user license agreement, you know that you have really no expectation of privacy with respect to the video game or the data involved. But, you know, it's a little creepy to be reminded of that.
So the reason I never thought of it as creepy, and once again, for those who may be listening for the first time, Mac and I are very different types of gamers. I'm on console a lot. He's a lot more PC and retro stuff. And so the reason that I disagree about it being creepy is because I've been an achievement hunter and a trophy hunter in the past, right? And I know that sometimes there are achievements that say things like get X number of stealth kills or, you know, beat the game without dying X number of times. And they even now have functionality that will allow you to show how close you are to getting one of those achievements by saying, hey, you've gotten 35 stealth kills or you've won 35 matches. You need to get to 50, whatever it is. So just because that's something I do, I know that those things are being tracked. I totally get Mac's perspective, though, that it does seem creepy, you know, if you're not that type of gamer.
It also seems creepy to just be reminded of the fact that on their side, they know, because it's entirely possible that the achievement could be entirely a, you know, like it goes to the console or it goes to the platform in order to track the achievements. But doesn't like wind up making it back to the game company themselves. I just think it's a little. Although Ishmobile is certainly disagreeing, thinks that it's creative, and as a matter of fact, that a villain such as the one played by Giancarlo Esposito ought to be creepy.
To me, he's the epitome of a villain, right? Ubisoft aside, like they couldn't have chosen a better person to play this role. I think it's a little bit tacky. Ubisoft is really known for making these games a service, at least lately, like especially with games like The Division 2. It was announced today that their new DLC or their new update's going to be delayed, but that game came out, 2 years ago? I don't know. And they still have people playing it, and so it seems like now they're kind of trying to turn every game into that, and I don't think it's necessary. There's some games like Far Cry and Assassin's Creed where it's just like, hey, play through it, enjoy it, but it's not a game as service. It's just a single player play through it once or twice, right? So I think they should leave it alone. Mac, let's do one or two more news stories before we move on. Well, Mac, one of them is Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's talk about that for a minute. That game came out today for all consoles. The interesting thing about it is, have you seen the Guardians of the Galaxy? Have you seen both of them?
Yes, I did see 1 and 2. I actually prefer 2 to 1, but that's a whole long thing.
Totally get it. Well, this game is getting good reviews. I think it had an 81 when I looked on Metacritic, which when you consider the fact that the Avengers came out to a lot more criticism, it's cool to see a Marvel game made by Square Enix like the Avengers was doing well. The thing that I think is weird, and I want to get your perspective, is that in this game, you only get to play as Star-Lord. Like, is that what you would have expected when you heard that there was going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy game?
No, I would have thought that you would get a chance to flip between a few different, at the very least, Rocket as well. Maybe Groot.
Exactly.
I can understand not playing, like, all of the, all of the characters from Guardians of the Galaxy, but I would have expected you'd at least get two of the team. It's Guardians plural. There's more than one,
right?
So I don't know.
And that's the thing to me. Like, I'm almost okay with the fact that they definitely missed out on a great co-op opportunity here. I mean, think about some of the best co-op games like Borderlands, or just any of those games. I think there's even some co-op stuff in Mass Effect. The ability to, like, get four or five friends, I forget how many Guardians there are, and just play through this together would have been great. Now, part of the reason I think this game is doing so well as far as reviews is because they didn't try to do more than necessary. They kept it single player. There are some decisions you have to make, but for the most part, you just go through the game, right? They're not trying to add multiplayer and all that. But I don't know. Star-Lord, really? Just because he's the leader doesn't mean he's the most fun to play. I don't know. That's just me.
I don't know. I wouldn't have. You know what? Can't go there. What's the last news story, my friend?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mac. We're going over on time. The last news story is pretty straightforward. It's about the Duke. We're getting the Duke controller for the 20th anniversary of Xbox. This is on IGN.com. Bottom line, Mac, it's going to be wired and it's going to cost $89.99. It is going to be in black, white, or a translucent purple, celebrating Cortana, the AI assistant in Halo. And it's wired and it works with your PC as well. The Duke. Do you miss the Duke?
I do not miss the Duke. I think that the color scheme, the rest of the whole, controller is great. I like a good solid wired controller whenever possible. But the Duke? Really? The big... I feel like they were somewhat panned for being so big. I feel like at least one news outlet back in the day called it like a loaf of bread with two thumbsticks. And I don't know. I would never have wanted to bring the size, of the Duke controller back.
There's a reason why things evolve. Maybe at the time the Duke came out, there were a lot of people with bigger hands. Now, and I think I have pretty decent sized hands, and I think that the Duke is too big. I can't think that there's anyone who is buying this and using it on their PC when you consider the amount of different controllers that are available on Windows 10, especially Mac, because this is wired. Like, I get nostalgia, right? I get trying to be original, but I think that it being wired is just kind of weird and completely unnecessary in this day and age. So,
all wired all the time for me.
There you go. That has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now that we've looked at what's going on right now, let's take a quick look into the past with some video game history. And Mr. Nice Guy, today, or I should say this week in years before, was kind of a big deal for game consoles. For starters, in 1991, we saw the death of the Sega Master System. Now, that system didn't exactly get much in the way of play here in the United States, especially not in comparison with the likes of the NES. I think for every, you know, 10, 15 people that you'd be like, hey, what console did you have in the early 90s? You know, they'd be like, oh, NES, NES, NES. Maybe you'd get somebody in there, a real enthusiast, who had the Master System. Of course, you know, I feel like Sega didn't really get big in the United States until, you know, until we hit the Genesis. Because, man, that was a slick ad campaign.
Of course.
Anyway, point being is that yes, the Master System died off. The last game released for the Sega Master System in 91. Mr. Nice Guy, you want to take a just a wild guess as to what the final game released for this Sega console was?
Oh, man, that's tough. I'm going to guess it was the last Sonic. Like, whatever the last Sonic game to come out was, probably the last game. Would that be, like, Sonic 3?
You are 99% correct. It was Sonic the Hedgehog, but it was just Sonic 1.
Sonic 1. Okay.
Yeah, they made a port to the Master System with Sonic, and that was the last title released for the Master System. After that, it was just, you know, all Genesis all the time. But that isn't necessarily where the story of the Master System ends, because while Sega was not exactly a big deal here in the United States, there was some place on the American continent where Sega has always been a huge deal, and that's been in Brazil. In Brazil, not only have there still been releases of the Sega Genesis, even up until like a couple of years ago, like re-releases of the Sega Genesis with more games, but also, like, you remember how several game companies had experimented with internet-based storefronts and things like that. A lot of things that only wound up getting experimented with, like, in Japan, for anything that was Sega-related, like the Sega MegaNet, that actually got a release and a tryout in Brazil. And in much the same way, there were still Master System games being made and released, and Sega Genesis games made and released in Brazil. The last one for the Master System would have been released 7 years after the final one was released here in the U.S., so in 1998, with Legend of Illusion.
Legend of Illusion? I haven't even heard of that.
I don't know what it is about Sega, but it's big in Brazil, even when it couldn't keep going here in the U.S. But that's enough Sega to talk about. I want to jump forward. Let's jump forward to the year 2000. We had a release on the Nintendo 64 of a sequel Legend of Zelda game. The only real sequel of the Legend of Zelda games, and that's Majora's Mask.
Yes.
Did you like Majora's Mask?
Yeah, I liked Majora's Mask. Now, hold on just a second. So Majora's Mask, this was the time travel one, right?
Exactly, yeah.
No, I did not like that one. No, I did not. I was thinking of... No, I did not like it.
I didn't care too much for Majora's Mask either. I mean, it was fine, but I wasn't exactly taken with the mechanics behind it. I didn't like the move back and forth. I do think that they wound up making some improvements on the original. There were mechanics that I thought were really well done. The mask system and having all these extra powers and really making an even more solid 3D puzzles in the various temples and such. I think all good things with there, but that main core of having to rewind time and kind of lose your progress really felt out of place for me. I wasn't a fan of it, but I know that a lot of people consider Majora's Mask to be terrific. And to those of you who do, I say, I think I understand where you might be coming from, but Mr. Nice Guy and I, we just disagree. But that's okay. Majora's Mask, I think, still deserves its place in history. if for no other reason, being the only sequel Mega Man, that or sequel Mega Man, sequel Legend of Zelda, until we get Breath of the Wild 2, whenever that winds up being. And that brings us to our last video game history item that I want to bring up. And that would be the launch in 2000 of the PlayStation 2. Now, I have some memories of the PlayStation 2, Mr. Nice Guy, but I don't want to take all of this from you. Do you have any, say, favorite games from the PlayStation 2? Was PlayStation 2 much of a console you were into?
Dude, PlayStation 2 was my jam. Like, I remember me and my brother watching basketball all day, first weekend of the NBA playoffs with our good friend, and then at halftime playing NBA 2K. Like, in between watching basketball, we were playing basketball. In terms of favorite games, man, I would have to go with, I love the Ratchet and Clank series on there. Obviously, Splinter Cell shined on there. There's just too many to really, really name. But that was the first console, I would say. I had one in my room as a young adult, and I would stay up till like 2 or 3 in the morning playing it.
Nice. I actually wound up missing out on the PlayStation 2 with a little asterisk. At around this time in my life, I was, like many of us, still living at our parents' house. And my parents had started this thing where they would be like a host family for an exchange student who was going to college. And so what we had, this would have been around the time that we had our first exchange student. His name was Yuji, great guy from Japan, and he was a huge video game nerd. And, I learned a little bit Japanese from him. I helped him with his English. We played video games together all the time. And he had a PlayStation 2, even though I didn't have one. So I got a chance to play and experience a lot of the multiplayer games on the PlayStation 2 with him. And, you know, I was a young teenager, probably annoying, and he was always really kind about letting me play his PlayStation 2 and hang out with him. So I've just got a lot of very fond memories of the PlayStation 2 because of, because of the friendships you make along the way.
That one was one of the best, and it may still be the best, one of the best-selling consoles, because at the time, DVD players were there.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of people were like, why don't I just get the PS2, right? Mm-hmm. And it has a DVD player as well, and it plays games. So it was great.
Yeah, it was a bargain at twice the price. But that's all the time that we have for today for video game history.
Time to talk about our topic of the week, a segment where... Someone just said something in the chat that's funny and distracted me. A segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, we're going to talk about video game difficulty today. And, you know, this is such an interesting topic because it's so polarizing. Before I, like, steal anyone's thunder, let's just read this article. This is on GameSpot.com by Eddie Mackick. Returnal's latest update is out now, adding new features, including suspend cycle in a photo mode. In a blog post, developer House Mark said it has been, quote, truly pleased and grateful to see the response to Returnal so far, adding that the team has been taking feedback on board. Mac, to give you some perspective, Returnal is a PlayStation 5 exclusive, and it's one of those games, and I always forget the name, but basically you go through the game, you collect power-ups, but when you die, you start all over. I forget the name for these types of games. Roguelites, right?
Roguelike is what, or roguelite. Although, to be fair, it's not a roguelite. It's more like a roguelite-lite, most of the ones. But anyway, sorry, that's just me being silly.
And just for perspective, this one is like a third-person game. It's not like a side-scrolling. It's like a legitimate, like, good graphics and all that stuff. So, the suspense cycle will allow players to pause their current cycle and continue it later. This lets you switch off your PS5 without losing progress. The structure of the game remains unchanged, so this functionality is not traditional mid-game save game option. By suspending the cycle, Returnal will simply create a single-use suspend point, and once you resume playing, the suspend point is deleted and cannot be used again, the studio said. Your game will continue directly from the moment you left it, and if you want to suspend the cycle again, your progress will be captured from that point onwards. I hope that that made sense how they explained that, Mac. Bottom line, this used to be a game where you had to complete it in one run, but because this was not like a mini side-scrolling game that you could beat in like 2 or 3 hours, it was more of like a full-fledged like 12 to 15 hour game. Obviously, it was giving people trouble. They've cut back on the difficulty. They've added this suspend point. What do you think, Mac? Are you a purist? Or are games being made too easy for the kids in these streets today?
Oh, you kids these days, you don't appreciate. We used to talk about Nintendo hard, okay? They made it harder. They did. They admitted to making games more difficult so as to encourage you to buy them rather than to rent them. But I digress. What I will say is, I don't know as necessarily the difficulty needed to be adjusted, but the addition of a save point or of a suspend point, a one-time use, I think that is a fantastic application of existing technology. You know, we have the technology, so why the heck not? Being able to stop a game just kind of anywhere and pick it back up, even if it winds up being a one-time use sort of thing, is very much worth it to me. I would love many games to have that. There's plenty of times where, you know, I'm playing something, I get a phone call. I mean, sure, I can pause the game, but maybe I actually have to go out and do something. You know what I mean?
Right.
I would love to be able to just suspend the game, go out and be back, even if it's not something that I can use, you know, however many times. If I can just use it once, totally cool. Give it to me. But difficulty adjustment? I mean, I don't know enough about the difficulty in the first place. Although I would feel a little bit... I mean, can you still, like, pump up the difficulty again? Or is this, like, permanent, it's less difficult all the way around for everybody?
So maybe I shouldn't even have referred to this as being less difficult, because I believe that the game is still just as challenging. It's just less of a marathon at this point, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's great. Something that makes a game more accessible is always going to be a good thing in my book. I even like it when you have difficulty options. Like, for example, in Celeste, you can play it with assist mode on, and you can hit all those switches and frankly, make a lot of the platforming fairly trivial. But... you know,
right.
I mean, you still get a chance to experience the game. And I think that that's very worthwhile.
Yeah, and I want to read one of the comments, maybe a couple of the comments that are here in the chat, because it kind of goes down the line of thinking that I had. Galvatron says, I read that Returnal has been a sales disappointment so far. Gamers just don't like dying over and over again with no substantial progress. This is why Housemarque patched it with a save file plus increased run rewards. Now, we don't know. He said he read that. I don't know if it's accurate or not. But here's the thing. Returnal is a new IP, and it is a PlayStation exclusive, a PlayStation 5 exclusive. So this isn't a game that you could get for your PS4, if I'm correct, or your PS5. It's just straight up PS5, which is already a console that people are having trouble picking up. So that it already had everything working against it in terms of sales numbers. One platform, not even backwards compatible. Coupled with that, the fact that it was not super accessible. It was very, very hard to complete the game. Ish Mobile says in the chat, I don't have 15 hours to sit and play a game in one go, especially if that's only if I'm good at it, right? And I'm with him. Like, I'm a dad. I have stuff to do. Even if I'm not, who has that kind of time? So I think that to increase their sales numbers back, I think that this is a smart move, and I think that to increase gamers' enjoyment, right, the non-hardcore gamer, I think that this is a really, really smart move.
I will say that this comment really gets to me. Galvatron, I hear what you're saying. This gets back to games as art. I love that phrase. If the game is meant to be difficult, the creator shouldn't be pressured to make it easier. It's like forcing Michelangelo to cover up David. And I hear what you're saying. And I think that adding more options doesn't necessarily have to go against that, against the creator's wishes. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't think they could have just pushed the update themselves. Somebody had to write it. I just hope that they, you know, I hope that we're reading too much into the situation and that, in fact, they weren't pressured by something like sales, but were perhaps pressured by feeling like what they put out there was not getting the kind of reception. Because not sure. All art is... art is not uncriticable. You know what I mean? And it's not incapable of being improved upon. And if video games are art, sure. Video games, much in the same way, there are improvements that can be made. And I think, especially when you can allow for changes without destroying the original, which is sort of a thing that we don't really seem to be able to do today, I'm a very big fan of it. So I love the option, especially, of switching things over. I really enjoy in, like, remasters when they put them out, and you can, like, switch between styles, because I think that's even another layer of adding to the experience while not detracting from the original.
Agree 100%. And Spen has hit the nail on the head with his comments about Deathloop as well. Basically saying that Deathloop did it better, but it had a challenging mechanic as well, kind of like Majora's Mask, where you go back in time in that game. Well, anyway, thank you for the comments. That has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. You know how this works. I'm going to post a link in the chat so that you who are here with us live can take a look for yourselves. Mr. Nice Guy, we're going to talk the virtues and the vices of Codename Mystery Babylon.
Okay, I like the name already.
So Makeshift Software comes to us from Queens. This happens to be their first Kickstarter, and their team is composed of 3 programmers, 4 pixel artists, and 1 user experience person. We are looking at a video game that is very much in a sort of RPG style with tactical style combat and Shining Force style cinematics. Or if you're not familiar with Shining Force, perhaps Advance Wars is one that you might be familiar with, where you make the move, the attack, and you get, you know, a cinematic there. So what are they asking for? They are asking for... Oh, sorry, I scrolled too far. They're asking for $20,000 to make this game. And $25 is your minimum buy-in to get a copy of this game to be delivered in July 2022, released for Steam and Switch. Now, gonna put a little asterisk on that Switch there. We'll come back to it. They said that they're looking for that $20,000 to fund the project, and they say that it is to get enough of the work done so that they can get a publisher to help take them the rest of their way for their full vision of the game. Or if only $20,000 is, you know, if that's not raised, or only if it's just a little bit, they say that they can make it happen on a reduced scale. Not that they wouldn't enjoy going it alone if the Kickstarter does well enough, and maybe they don't even have to grab a publisher, but that's just kind of what they say their goals are here. Now, I put an asterisk, Mr. Nice Guy, on the Switch, because at least in the backing, the rewards section there, if you want to secure a digital copy of the Switch release, then the only one I've seen that show up on is the kickstarting at $150 side that comes with both PC and Switch, art book, t-shirt, you know, a lot of physical rewards as well. And so I can't say for certain, but it looks like if you wanted a copy, digital copy of the Switch release to kickstart, you would have to pay at that $150 mark, whereas the PC at just $25, and that seems a little bit not exciting for me. But Mr. Nice Guy, you've had a minute to look over it and see some of the visuals there. Any thoughts?
So Mac, my thoughts on this, first and foremost, and Ish Mobile asked a question that was kind of on my mind. He said, did I hear it will be released on the Steam Deck? And my understanding is that with the Steam Deck, anything that's on Steam could potentially work. But as we discussed last week, they will have a new testing system for each individual game that says, yes, this game has been tested, green check mark or something like that, and works perfectly. No, this game does not work, red check mark or something. And then yellow, like, yes, it works, but it has issues or something like that. So we don't know. First of all, I don't really like games like this. Mm-hmm. I tried to get into Fire Emblem on the Nintendo Switch. It's like a turn-based battler, and I just can't get into them. Now, I'm not going to hold that against them, but I don't like the fact that they are trying to get $20,000 so that they can then secure a publisher. I just don't think that that's the way that this should work. I think that you should make a quality product, and then you should pitch it to a publisher, right? And then maybe the publisher pitches in with some of the funding. And I don't really know the granular aspects of how games are made, but that's just, to me, that's what would make sense. Like, you don't go to the public and say, hey, we don't have this finished product, give us money so then we can go pitch it to people. I feel like you gotta put that effort in yourself. That's me. Or self-release the game. Those are your options.
I do like some of this. I'm a huge fan of Final Fantasy Tactics, so Tactics style stuff is a big draw for me. And I will say, though, that it does have a playable demo. And, you know, that's a big deal for me, because all the talk in the world and all the fancy renders and everything won't get you anywhere near as far as a playable demo. Just show us. Show us what it's going to look like. Right. Show us that you can bring it together. But I have to admit, I think I'm going to pass on this one. I like the idea. I'm just not convinced that the implementation is there. $25, I'm willing to pay that much for a game, although $150 to get the Switch is a bit much. It's a lot much, really. I understand it costs a lot, but, you know, there needs to be that availability at a lower price point. But at the end, I just don't think it's the type of tactical style combat that I would enjoy. So, Mr. Nice Guy, I'm gonna have to say kick it. I wish them the best of luck, but just not enough.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say kick it as well. Spenis kind of summarized my thoughts. He says, this reminds me more of Fire Emblem, which is what I had said earlier, which is more of a AAA and mainstream and has been sustainable for years, an ambitious game with a price point for the PC version, right? And so to me, this does seem like a poor man's Fire Emblem, which I didn't like Fire Emblem, so I doubt that I would like this. Plus, it's not, they don't have a publisher, so I got to say kick.
Yeah. Well, best of luck, Makeshift Software. We hope you get funded, and we hope that Codename Mystery Babylon becomes the type of game that you've always wanted it to be. But that's been Kick or Kickstart.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Nerdflex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts. Now, for those of you who are here live, we do like to take questions live so that nobody thinks we're Googling. And so we can try to answer those on the spot without the assistance of phone a friend, without the assistance of any of those other things they used to do. We really just put our noggins together.
When you get right down to it, we are the friend each other is phoning. So we kind of like constant phone a friend.
That's fair. So I don't think that's cheating. It's not like we're using Google. I am working on pulling up the test bank right now, because I was so intrigued by your Kickstarter, I totally forgot to do it while you were doing that. For those of you who are here live, if you have questions, multiple choice and gaming related, please put those in the chat at this time, and we will do our best to answer them. I'm going to guess, Mac. I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that maybe Spenis is going to put a Pokemon question in the chat, because it seems like every week he does that. You know what I mean?
Perhaps.
These are questions that have been compiled. I think there's like a couple thousand in here. We just randomly select one using this random button every week. And let's see what we come up with. And you know what? There's a Pokemon question. Do we want to do a Pokemon question?
Yes, let's do a Pokemon question.
Let's do this, and then you can read Spenis's question. So here's the Pokemon question from the test bank. Which Pokemon can have a possible 4,294,967,295 patterns. 4,294,967,295 patterns.
Well, I mean, I'm not even sure I know what constitutes a pattern within the context of that question. Or if we're talking like a visible like pattern of pixels on the screen, I assume that something like Missing No or like a glitch Pokemon that's composed of like junk data, junk visual data, could actually generate in that many different patterns. But patterns, yeah, I'm gonna have to just throw this one because I just have no context for what patterns means in this question.
I feel like, dude, so my mind, I think of like what would make sense here, like a Kirby type Pokemon. Maybe Ditto? I don't know. But to me, that's not a pattern. Ditto just copies the other Pokemon, right?
Yeah. They just copy? I mean, if there were that many Pokemon in the game, then yes, that would be the answer, would be Ditto. Because you could make that form. But I just... no idea.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We have like a bunch of questions in the chat, and I kind of want to try to do all of them. So I'm just going to go with Ditto. Should we do Ditto, final answer?
Yeah, let's just do Ditto.
Spinda. It was not Ditto. It was Spinda.
Spinda. I'm still hung up on what what patterns means. Anyway.
We'll have to look it up later. Let's keep going, Mac. Why don't you read one?
Yeah, sure. All right. So Spenis the Menace asks, fighting games have been known for making joke characters at times. Mortal Kombat did that with one of their ninja characters who was inspired from the music world. Which character was it? Was it Reptile, Smoke, Rain, or Scorpion? Scorpion was, you know, originally it was Scorpion Sub-Zero. Then we had Noob Saibot came. And then, so Reptile, I think, was in there. So I think we're either talking Smoke or Rain. And I feel like the hint from the music world means we're talking Rain, Purple Rain from Prince. So I think Rain is the correct answer.
I was actually thinking it was Scorpion, like a reference to Sting. But if you're confident that it was Rain, like Purple Rain, then I'm going to go with you. Because I had never heard that theory before.
Sweet. Let's see. Purple Rain, but Rain is our, is at least my guess, Spenis. And I said it confidently enough to trick Mr. Nice Guy into going with me on that. Tell us what the answer is, if you please. So the answer is Ed Boon was known for being a Prince fan, so it is Rain. The irony goes even further as Rain's color swap was also purple. So, Purple Rain.
Cool. Question number two from Galvatron. Which horror movie killer has never guest starred in... we got a lot of Mortal Kombat questions. Has never guest starred in a Mortal Kombat game? Is it Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Leatherface, the Predator, the Xenomorph, Evil Dead Ash, Spawn, Bobby Kotick, or Mr. Rogers?
And Mr. Rogers, horror movie killer?
I'm pretty sure Bobby Kotick actually maybe did make an appearance in Mortal Kombat. CEO of Activision. This is tough. Mr. Rogers seems like it's too obvious.
Yeah.
I would assume that Freddy Krueger...
I don't know, dude.
I have no idea. Do we want to just go with Mr. Rogers? Because I'm pretty sure he was never in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, let's go for Mr. Rogers.
Final answer... All right, what was the answer, Mac?
All right, so it's The Evil Dead's Ash. Besides Hopes and Dreams, Bobby Kotick and Mr. Rogers didn't kill anyone. And to be fair, I think besides Hopes and Dreams, Bobby Kotick didn't kill anything and Mr. Rogers didn't kill anyone. So there were three correct answers to that question in that Evil Dead Ash, Bobby Kotick, and Mr. Rogers didn't kill anyone. I will say that Ash from The Evil Dead is not a horror movie killer. He was a horror movie protagonist. So yeah, I say on a technicality, we call it a win on two questions.
Drop in knowledge. And then do we just want to save those other questions for another time since we've done three and we're running?
Yeah, let's do it because I need to get to a little thing called Activision Blizzard.
Yep.
And thank you, everybody, for your questions. We've much appreciated Nerdflex today, and we'll save those for later. We'll get to them. All right. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese. As has been promised for a while, we're talking Activision Blizzard. And as you will probably recall, they are in hot water because allegedly, and let's face it, almost certainly this is true, that they've been fostering an environment of discrimination, sexual harassment, and pay discrimination for quite some time. The investigations began several years back, like I believe 2018, if memory serves, and in July, the California Department for Employment and Housing, DFEH, I'm going to refer to them from here on out as the state, and they spearheaded a lawsuit. And by September, the Equal Employment Opportunity folks at the federal level, the EEOC, I'm going to call them the feds, were also headed that direction on similar grounds. And since we can't just have a party with, you know, three, we got to get a fourth in there. The Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, was also looking into Activision Blizzard, and we talked about this a few episodes back, on their suspicion that Activision Blizzard had been concealing the investigations from the state and the Fed from their shareholders. But that's not super important to this story. So, the plot thickens, because the Fed and the state, we found out recently that those two agencies were apparently working together to handle this discrimination, sexual harassment, and pay discrimination issues at Activision Blizzard. And that makes an awful lot of sense. And they went so far as to divide the stuff up by issue. So the feds were going to head up the harassment, and the state was going to handle the unequal pay and promotions. And they had agreed a while back to divvy it up and to work together to cooperate. But all of that collaboration seemed to come to an end because of the settlement, maybe? We're still unsure as to where exactly everything happened, but because of the settlement that the feds reached with Activision Blizzard, we found out about what was going on. You probably remember $18 million was the settlement. That was reached with the feds, with the equal employment, with the EEOC people, right? And shortly thereafter, the state, the DFEH, attempted to intervene in that settlement, claiming it was unreasonable. And then it's just been a lot of back and forth, Mr. Nice Guy, between these two. And we've learned all sorts of stuff that, like, I don't think we should have learned. Like, there were some bickering back and forth about two lawyers that are currently working for the state, right? They used to work with the feds on the same case, question mark? And that's a question mark because somebody is lying about this. And I don't say that lightly. Because these two people, the feds say that these two people were directly involved with this, with the federal government's work on Activision Blizzard before they transferred to the state, right? And the state people have sworn statements saying that they weren't directly involved with this case while they were employed with the feds. And the state has also, like, said the exact opposite in filings about these two lawyers previously. So it's like the state has said both, yes, they're directly involved, no, they're directly not involved, and the feds said they were. So somebody is lying about it, and there's weird documentation in courts, and it's just, like, bonkers because, I mean, whoever's lying about this shouldn't be lying, right? But also, since the two organizations were working together in the first place, this, like, shouldn't be an issue in the... It's like, you know, we were working together. Why should their involvement be, like, an issue? So it's just weird. But then things get even worse, right? So one of the two people who's working for the state but used to work for the feds sent out a letter to some quantity of the Activision Blizzard employees. And you can read that letter either very charitably or very uncharitably. The uncharitable reason, or the best of intentions, reading it as charitably as possible, it says, hey, you might get some ambulance-style chaser lawyers contacting you about this settlement, so, you know, be careful about that. But reading it uncharitably, it's a letter from somebody who isn't your lawyer telling you not to seek out a lawyer, which is, like, mondo unethical, right? Like, that's right. Not cool. And so, of course, in all of this crazy back and forth, this weird things they're going up, and Activision Blizzard made a special motion, because of course they did, trying to capitalize on the back and forth, saying, oh, hey, well, looks like we got a halt on all this, you know, on all this hatred toward Activision Blizzard, because you guys got some stuff to straighten out, right? Which, of course, just recently, the judge was just like, no, we don't need to fix this before we fix you, Activision Blizzard. So, but here's where it comes down to. It's still very much in the works, and every time I wanted to talk about it, we got, like, another twist and turn. Because, like, we got that settlement, and then we got, oh, no, that's unreasonable from the state people. And then they're like, well, you've got people who shouldn't even be on your team. And they're like, nuh-uh, it's just been this crazy back and forth, and I don't know what to make of it, and neither does anybody else. And so that's where we stand with Activision Blizzard. I don't even know what else to say. That's been Legalese.
Love it, Mac. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that has been our show. Thank you for tuning in to episode number 204 of Two Nerds in a Pod, Nerdiest Video Game Podcast in a Galaxy. And before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, and I'm super excited to talk about it. You know what to do. Mac, what you been watching and playing, brother?
Well, Mrs. the Mac and I, we've been watching through Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Just made it through season 6. One more season to go. And I've also been watching Great British Bake Off. Love the show. As for playing, I recently started playing Skyward Sword on Wii, because I actually, ages back, I bought Twilight Princess, or I bought the case for Twilight Princess from a pawn shop, and inside it had Skyward Sword. So I recently started playing it, and you know me, I went from, like, Majora's Mask straight to Breath of the Wild. That was, like, my leap. I hadn't played any of the Zeldas really in between. So when I got to Breath of the Wild, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is such a huge leap in Zelda, Zelda stuff. But playing Skyward Sword just makes me realize how much it's been an iterative process. You know, you've got things like the stamina wheel in Skyward Sword. You've got things like being able to climb on stuff in a much more way. Because you can, like, you can, like, take a couple steps up a wall as Link in that. There's just a lot of cool things that I see now that I've seen the end. I'm like, oh, I see how you guys were doing this every step along the way. And I think it's been really cool. What about you?
Dude, so I've been watching a lot. I started Squid Game, and I only got, like, 10 minutes in. Now, to be fair, I was super tired. So I only got, like, 10 minutes in before dozing off. I've been watching Why the Last Man. I've been watching the new Wonder Years, which is dope. And there was one other thing I was going to say. Oh, I watched some Dune on HBO Max. Did not finish it yet, but I've been enjoying it. Apparently, Mac, Dune heavily influenced Star Wars, Game of Thrones, and a lot of the IPs that we see in nerd culture that are so popular. So I'm excited to finish that and then maybe pick up the books afterwards. We'll have to see. As far as what I've been playing, it's a lot of the same. Still playing Back 4 Blood. Spennis and Galvatron, man. I looked for y'all online. We were supposed to squad up. I don't know where y'all are at. Where y'all at? Where y'all at? Your boy's lonely on the Xbox. I've been playing a lot of Black Ops Cold War. I am never going to get bored of that game, dude. I'm not going to pick up Vanguard, Call of Duty Vanguard. I'm just going to keep playing Cold War. And a little bit of Deathloop as well. Mac, what are people into in the chat?
Well, let's see. I'll take watching. So, Ishmael is watching What If and Shameless. Uncle Ruckus is playing watching Joe Bell and the award-winning podcast Two Nerds in a Pod. Thanks for that. From Love Dusk Till Dawn and Shooter, Galvatron has been watching Dune and thinks it's pretty good, except for the ending. Oh, gosh, you shouldn't have told us that there was a twist. The Chucky TV show and The Lost Boys and Corpse Bride. Let's see. Spenis is also watching What If? And yeah, that's what I see for watching.
Nice. And as far as playing, we got my boy Uncle Ruckus, who, dude, I need to squad up with you too on Back for Blood, man. He's been playing Back for Blood, Madden, and MLB The Show. Galvatron just typing a bunch of random walls of opinions in the chat. Ishmobile's playing Insurgency, Sandstorm, and Subnautica. Spenis is playing MLB The Show, Madden 22, The Artful Escape. I heard that that's a Game of the Year candidate. I have to play that. Yeah, I think that's it, right? We got any other stuff people are playing? Oh, Galvatron's playing Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Doom Eternal, Echo Generation, Back for Blood. Playing with randoms is the worst. Dude, that's why we need to squad up. I told you that already. Mac, why don't you take us home?
Oh, and I did miss. Crux Capacitor has also seen Dune as well. So thanks, everybody, for coming out to the show. Thanks for being a part of it. Your trivia, your feedback, everything is what makes this show the awesome award-winning show that it is. So we hope that you'll join us next week, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific, each Tuesday on twitch.tv/twonerdsinapod. Be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy. Bye.
See ya.